Welcome to the Crazy Wisdom Podcast. This podcast is for you if you have an insane drive to find the truth of things. It's not the good answers that we seek, but the good questions. I interview a range of different guests from many different fields, all with the intention to uncover the simple truths that are hidden in plain sight. Most people don't want to go there. I go there. My guests go there, and you benefit. Please let me know if you enjoy these episodes, and as always, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to the podcast. Welcome to the Crazy Wisdom Podcast. My guest today is Kendra Koch. She's founded four companies, one of which failed, two are going strong, one is mid-pivot. She's also a writer, a mom, and a fellow AI whisperer. So welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
What has been the most, this might be a hard question to answer, but what is the most interesting thing you've learned about how to get this AI alien intelligence type of thing to do what you want it to do?
I think what's been most interesting to me is that I kind of went into it thinking, oh, AI is going to solve a lot of the hard thinking problems, but actually AI requires you to be an even deeper thinker. So it's just like restructuring the way that I approach problem solving with AI has been actually really beneficial to my entire life. But I think, I kind of went into it thinking this will be easy. I'll just tell it what I want. I'm like, no, it doesn't work quite like that.
It's so interesting. There's so many layers to it. We just had our first AI Whisperers club meetup yesterday in Buenos Aires. And it's so weird because, as you said, it does make you have to think deeper. It makes you a better communicator. I imagine it's the same thing with delegating tasks to human beings, is that you need to be really clear, communicate really well, and not have too much other going on. Things like if you tell it to do four or five different things, it will get confused. Well, actually, I haven't tried that before. Maybe I should try that one time, is ask it to do four or five completely unrelated tasks to see what it does. I guess the question for you now is, like, have you delegated to human beings before? And what is the difference between delegation to this alien intelligence versus human beings?
Yeah, I have delegated to human beings. And lately, I've been doing a lot of kind of instructional guidance because I'm a parent now. And so to me, I feel like working with AI is a lot like working with a toddler or an intern or somebody new on your team or really anybody that you need to get some sort of result out of. It is similar to relationships that we have in our lives. So delegation can be in a way the same, but it's not identical.
Yeah, I think what you said there is really interesting in terms of, because you brought in having a child and kind of teaching this new human being like how the world works, and then interns and people who are new, because the fundamental thing that I've learned a lot about myself is my ability to give it exactly the context that it needs to get the job done. And it's the same thing with like an intern, because an intern doesn't know what they're in right now. They don't know what they've just joined, and you have to be, and you know what they've just joined, but you have to actually express that clearly. And this is the funny part about going back to what you said about, like, I just thought it would be easy. I also thought it would be easy. I thought like all my problems would, you know, are starting to go away. And this is the whole hype bubble too, is like, oh, it's just going to get so easy. All my programmer friends are like, man, what am I going to do without this job that I have? This thing's going to be able to do it. And actually, the programming might be the soonest one to drop in terms of a loss of employment or a change in employment, because it's so good at writing code. What do you think about all that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to take everyone's jobs. I think it might require us to think differently about what our job is. And just like anything, the internet, when we got like the internet in the 90s, like I was reading encyclopedias before that. It doesn't, you know, we're still looking for information. We're still trying to get jobs done. We just have to think differently about how we're using the tools that are available to us. This is a new tool available to us. I can't speak to like it taking programming jobs, because that's not something that is in my realm, but, I, I don't see it as a giant threat to people's employment.
And what is your realm? What are you working on right now?
Yeah, I worked mostly in the wellness space. So I come from like words land. I studied psychology. I've worked a lot in wellness and health. And I've done a ton of writing and content and marketing. So that is an area where AI is definitely causing some disruption, but.
Well, have you actually gotten it to write good content?
No. Yeah. I've gotten it to give good, like a good first draft, which oftentimes is the hardest part of getting to good content. So from that perspective, I think it's really useful, but an end final draft, like definitely not.
And do you think that has to do with just the, I imagine that you're using ChatGPT-4, but if you're using something else, let me know. But do you think that has to do with this particular voice that has been programmed inside of ChatGPT? Or do you think that it's something inherent to LLMs that they're just not very good at writing something that humans would want to read? Like, I can read what ChatGPT gives me. I don't enjoy reading it. And no matter what I do, it's like purely informational transfer, basically. There's no sort of spark or spirit to it. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I've tried different programs, but mostly using ChatGPT. I think it's partially the voice that's in there. If the models are trained on the content that's already existing, there's a lot of bad content. So, I mean, like anything, the input is going to affect the output. And so if there's a lot of bad inputs compared to like good inputs, it might just dilute what you're getting.
Yeah.
But I also think the other thing is like, when you think about writing or content or language, there's many different goals. And so when we're writing content, we have to think about like, what is the goal of this piece and who is the audience? And so ChatGPT is just like kind of has a more general view on it unless you give it those instructions. So it's going to just write general content for a general audience, but good content is very specific.
Interesting.
Including the voice and the language used. And so a lot of times when I'm like refining content that's been written by AI, I'm tweaking words here and there and also tweaking punctuation to better match the like way the audience would relate to the language. And punctuation, because writers use punctuation like breaths and AI does not. So I think a lot of times it's following the rules, but good writing doesn't always follow the rules. And
yes,
so
exactly.
We need to figure out where to break it. Yeah.
Have you tried giving it those two contexts before, which is please write this in a voice like this, knowing that the audience is this, and break rules that make it feel like a human being? Have you ever tried those prompts?
I haven't tried break rules prompt. That's a good one. I think I'll play with that later.
Yeah.
I have asked it to write in a certain way for a certain audience, and it sometimes gets it. But I think what makes really great content is also knowing what's on the cusp of people's awareness. And a lot of times you're going to see more of that on social media than in content. So really good content is always a little ahead of like what was written before, or it's a little bit deeper, or it's gone a little farther. And the AI models are not necessarily there yet. So
that's
really, that can be tricky too.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And then also that brings to mind the Elon Musk's Grok as a part of Twitter, which is, I heard a very interesting nuance to this. I forget his name, Jeff something, but Jeff with a G-E-O-F-F. And he said basically that it's a really horrible idea to train an LLM based on the mental illness that is Twitter. Like Twitter is just one, you know, there's an interesting news, but then there's just one giant cesspool of mental illness that's just like trading back and forth. And so training an LLM on that is quite strange. And who knows what the effects will be. But like you said, it probably has that tip of awareness type of thing. It probably can get that. And this reminds me when we were talking earlier about training the models, and I wonder how much forethought was put into OpenAI's strategy of like that will actually go and train this model on the internet, not knowing or not really evaluating. Maybe they did evaluate, I don't know, but of the content that it was being trained on. I'm sure a lot of people are thinking about it right now, about how to train this on only high quality content, only high expert level quality. I'm sure a lot of people are thinking about that. But it just goes back to that. This is like a fundamentally new technology that nobody knows how it works, which is leveling the playing field. That's why I'm very excited about it. I'm really excited about sharing this information with the local Argentines down here, because they are running out of the government subsidies. The current new president has basically said everybody has 1 year of subsidies and then they have to get a job. And so I'm going to help the Argentines level up using AI, particularly in terms of coding, so that they can get better remote jobs. And so, it's just like a leveling playing field. Really interesting. Any takes on that? Anything interesting on that ramble I just went on?
Yeah. Well, what you're doing in Argentina sounds really cool. I'd love to hear more about that at some point. Regarding like training it on social media, that scares me. I mean, social media to me is like the worst of humankind, like just spit out onto the internet, because what happens is like when we're in relationships mm-hmm. in community in normal, mm-hmm. we have some filters, because like you can go back to survival psychology or whatever, where we're not going to get ousted from the group. But on social media, we're like, this is not really my group. Or there may be like incentives to trolling, to, you know, kind of nasty behavior that don't exist in normal communities the way that they do online. And I'm not sure like we want to be training models on that, but I'm sure people who are working on it are thinking about that. I really hope they are. I mean, I can't speak for them, but I just really hope they're thinking about that.
These are all good points. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm also really curious about what's going to happen. Like you mentioned training models on high quality content, and there is less of it. And also high quality content will become more and more protected. And so it's going to get harder and harder to be training on high quality content. People want to preserve their IP. And so I wonder how easily we'll be able to do that. Unless we're like having people who can create that kind of content, training the models, instead of just trying to scrape in like information that is already out there. And also like what are we considering to be high quality? Because there's like high quality writing, there's high quality information. At the end of the day, we want to always move. I mean, this is my personal opinion, but we want to always move towards truth. Like what is the most truthful information we can use? And truth is kind of a moving target, because it depends on context, and it depends on awareness, right? So I don't think it's going to be perfect. It's going to be messy probably. But it's something to be aware of. Like when we're looking at AI content, you'd be shocked at how many things I find that it just like makes up. Like this is like straight up made up. Like, and the way it comes up with the things it's made up is really interesting and creative, but I'm like, this is not accurate. So we have to get better and better at learning how to analyze the media we consume.
Yeah. And it's not just the AI. This is the funny part, because it's just the first form of intelligence that we've invented. There's no other forms of intelligence that we can speak to on this planet. And this one is the first one that we can speak to that's not the same as us, although it's been trained on us. But the moral, the funny part of that story is that we human beings are also just making stuff up a lot of the time. And mm-hmm. so this is the strangest thing about the voice, because the voice is like this weird mixture, the voice specifically with ChatGPT and all the other ones too. They're all going after this voice, which is, it's like, I am the authority on this subject, and also I don't know. So it's like this strange mix of being like a scientist, the scientists always have to end all the papers with like, we need more research on this. We don't know yet. But then mixing it with, this is the answer. This is the final answer. This isn't just the machine as well. This is also like modernity. If you go back to the 1960s and 1970s, that was the way that everybody was taught how to write, was like, this is true. Like, this is the truth. We are modern. We've found the truth. And then postmodern was all about like, oh, the truth doesn't really exist. It's all relative, you know? And so now we're in this strange, weird land where there's just so much mistruth out there. It's all over the internet. And it's all of our models are trained on that. And it's just really strange. And soon we'll come down the pipeline with sort of, you know, alternative, augmented reality and virtual reality where, the things that our eyes are showing us, might not necessarily be true, which is, again, goes back to the fact that what our eyes are showing us aren't like right now are not necessarily the truth either. Mm-hmm. Anything to say on those topics?
Yeah. Well, it makes me think about like how we perceive, and right now I'm working a lot on like sensory wellness, because I think that's something that's really overlooked in the wellness space is like, we're not just taking in information with our eyes or our ears or, you know, the two things where we are like logical, analytical brains are like, we see things and we hear things, therefore they're true, but our bodies are perceptive everywhere. Like we feel things, we smell things. Like, I don't know, the best example I can give is I used to teach like preschoolers, and there was a girl in my class who had all of a sudden one day, she just had an odd smell. And I was like, her smell's changed. And this sounds super weird, but I think it illustrates a point. And every time I would be near her, I just noticed this really pungent kind of smell. And I thought, maybe she's sick because this just doesn't make sense. And I know she's like bathed and well cared for at home. So I told her parents, hey, maybe you should take her into the pediatrician. Like, I just noticed that she has an odd smell. And they're like looking at me like I'm super crazy. And also they were a bit annoyed because they're like working parents and they don't want to take their
kid. They don't want to do it, yeah.
But she just keeps coming back to school and the smell's getting more intense to me. And now I'm noticing her behavior changing. She's a little bit lethargic. She's a little less playful. There's no obvious signs of illness, but I'm just perceiving some changes in her behavior now. And like, I'm getting more and more certain, like something is wrong. So I keep telling her parents, please take her to the pediatrician. Please take her to the pediatrician. Mm-hmm. They don't take her. Mm-hmm. And then like 2 weeks go by and she's not in school and she doesn't come for a week and she doesn't come for another week. And, you know, I had the administrators call and I didn't hear anything, but then she comes back in and I find out she had an enormous abscess in her throat, growing, growing, growing. She had a bacterial abscess. Nobody could see it. She wasn't complaining. She didn't seem sick. She didn't have a fever, but I could smell it. So like we can perceive all kinds of things with our senses, all of our senses. And most people don't know we have 8 senses. Mm. So like we also have proprioception, which is like our body's in motion. That's a sense. And you can feel. That's like why you feel sick when you're on a boat, you know, but this is all information that our environment is bouncing to our bodies. Our bodies are like perceiving and taking in and forming a mental picture and a story about where we are. Are we safe? Who are we? Who are the people around us? Now, when there's like an AI model, it's not perceiving with proprioception or smell or taste or all these other things that human bodies can perceive. And so sometimes it's just missing something. And I feel like it's that, like it's not just sight and sound or words or images that we perceive with.
Yeah. And not only that, it's also the story. What I loved what you said. I want to quickly go back to the 8 senses because, we've got our sense of touch. We've got the sense of hearing. We've got the sense of smell. We've got the sense of sight. We got the sense of taste. We got proprioception. What are the other 2 ones?
Yeah, I have to pull them up. Interoception. And that's like how we feel inside our own bodies. So if you've ever like felt yourself digest, that also sounds super weird, but like like my daughter says all the time, my tummy is grumbling when she's hungry. Well, she has this internal feeling of like her stomach moving because the stomach acid is like churning around because there's no food in her stomach. So that's one example of interoception, but those are really critical for our survival because those senses tell us when we need to eat, when we need to drink water, when we need to sleep, maybe we're eating too much and we need to stop eating. Like those are signals that we've been taught over time to start like to ignore. And as human beings, we need to like get back to paying attention to those. And then there's another sense, which is vestibular, and that is
balance
from your inner ear. Yeah. So balance. It's also like, it relates to balance, but I think it also helps us understand like depth. So if we're high or we're low, like we need to know where we are in space. If you don't know where you are in space, like where you are on the map, how do you know where to go? And so that sometimes I see maybe popping up with AI is like, it's not oriented to anything. Like it doesn't know where on the map it is. And so it doesn't know where to go. It's like, it's on the whole map. And we're like, no, we need to orient it first and then like give it directions.
It's so interesting. So I love the eight senses. Very interesting. The, what I liked about what you explained about with those eight senses too, is that the story that it wraps all together is also essential because it's not necessarily just the eight senses in isolation. It's also the whole experience that we're having and the story that we label that experience it. And that's like, regardless of whether the story is wrong or right, it's just, that's the way that we're navigating reality. And so the AI, I guess the AI probably spends its time in that story sense. It's like the meta layer because it's just been trained on all of the collective stories throughout history and culture and all those things. I just saw one of the most interesting things I've seen from Nat Friedman, which is that they've found a bunch of scrolls hidden under something in Italy. And they're using the AI to translate those scrolls, and that there's tons and tons more. And it's just, I think we're going to be so blown away by some of the things we discover with this new technology matched with all these other changes that are going on in society. So I guess the question we're trying to talk to here is the senses for the AI. What are the senses for the AI? Feels like that story plays a big part. It definitely has vision, definitely doesn't have many of the other ones. And yeah, it's just so weird. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I know there's some people working on technologies to like pick up on emotionality, and that would be part of the like voice. And so in the sound of the voice, like, is this person angry? Is this person tired? Like whatever. I think it can get close, but I do worry about us relying too much on the accuracy of that, because again, like what you see on a person's face and you might interpret it as annoyance or something, we often like take it personally, right? We're like, they're annoyed with me. Well, maybe they're annoyed because there's like a buzzing sound and it's really distracting. And so without the context of the environment, we don't always know what that person is thinking or feeling, or we may know what they're feeling but not know why. And so it can be really risky to be like, okay, they're angry, but then okay, if somebody is angry, what does that mean about me and how I should behave next?
And it goes into like the realm of human thought and just like how we're sort of walled gardens. And you know, what we're doing right now is we're transferring this information. But even when you know somebody for years and years and years, and you've done so much transfer of information, there are still ways that people surprise you, both positively and negatively. And there's like just so much going on inside the boundary of a human being that it's, and now we've got robots and we've got a hype cycle that's basically saying these robots are going to be able to know us better than we know ourselves. And at the same time, they're doing crazy hallucinations. They're doing all these things that are far outside of our understanding. And it's just gonna get pretty interesting. Not 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 sure where it's going to go. Are you excited about the future? Are you afraid of the future? What's your take on the future?
I think I always feel a bit of both. I mean, I don't want to be one of those people is like the future is going to be doom and gloom. I just don't want to live that way. Like if it will, okay, it'll happen when it does, and we'll be in that reality and we'll have to make our own meaning out of it. I think there are some like really big risks that we need to be mindful of. And when the incentives are to always move fast and make money, like that makes us less mindful of risks. And so that does worry me a little bit. And like, I also think accessibility of AI models and how we use AI is really going to impact how it develops. If it's only in the hands of certain groups of people, it's going to reflect a certain group of people. Like it's going to be a mirror for humankind, and humankind is not always pretty. So, the more like diversity of thought and the more diversity of like awareness that we feed it, I think the healthier it's going to be. And just the same for our own communities, like around us. Like we need to model healthy communities with, while we use AI. And the more healthy communities we have in real life, whatever like crazy things happen that people are predicting, we'll be more resilient to be able to handle it and navigate it. And so I think there could be some really amazing stuff too. Like you said, breakthroughs, like understanding more of our past, which can really help us make better decisions in the future. That's the whole point of memory, right? Like our evolutionary driver for memory is to not repeat things in the past that put us in harm's way so that we would survive. So if we can have a better memory with AI, like, and we can use it, that could be good.
I really like that framing of memory. I've never heard that before of why memory exists as a way to not repeat the mistakes. And it makes a lot of sense because if you watch animals are super programmed to do various things, but they have memory, but they don't have very nuanced memory. They don't have language. Oh, I wonder what the implication for that is with language. Have you looked into that, like the connection between memory and language? Because it does seem pretty connected as well. Well, this memory and language versus memory and with pictures. And I know a lot of, there's like different types of people. For example, myself, I don't have as many images as other people in terms of my thoughts. And I know other people, like my friend Eric, who's a 3D programmer, he just thinks in images only. But yeah, I wonder what the relationship is between memory and language. Do you know anything about that?
I'm not like an expert in that, but I have some thoughts on memory. I again, it goes back to the senses. Like we create memories with all of our senses, and most of us, it's not going to be this picture sense. It's going to be a felt sense in the body, like more of that interoception. So when you go into a space and all of a sudden you get cold and clammy and like tight feeling in your chest, that's your sense memory saying there's a threat here. Or if you go somewhere and you feel really open and spacious and excited, that's also your sense memory saying, you know, this is a safe environment. There's something good for you here. Sometimes we're a little bit wrong in that, that's where trauma comes in. But I think our language is sometimes shaped by memory, where, you know, if we lean often towards like more negative language or more like other language, that could be because of how we're feeling based on certain things in our past. Yeah, language is super interesting. I'm not a linguist, but I definitely believe that language shapes our perception completely. Like if you probably see this in Argentina, like I know when I travel or I'm getting translations or whatever, there are some words that just don't exist in English, and they're matching a feeling or an experience that is unique to that culture. And so it would be so interesting to see if AI could layer all of that and then like pull out like what is the common humanity between all these languages, and we could find a
Ooh.
way to like relate. That would be super cool to see.
And it can already do a lot of that. I mean, that's the funniest thing that's going on right now. I go to this coffee shop just down the corner from my apartment. I've been going there every day for coffee for a long time. And then over the past month, I've started to get to know all the people working there. So they're all asking me for English lessons. And English lessons, like, it's like, I probably couldn't make enough money to start doing it for all of them, just because the level of economic difference is quite vast between the United States and here. But I'm instead of offering them the lessons, I'm like, here, just use the AI. And it doesn't matter if it's 3.5 versus ChatGPT 4, because the 3.5 is good enough at languages to help you teach this language. It's like, it's a, you can use the free version. The ability to pull out languages is really funny. I like what you mentioned about some things existing in one language versus another one. My favorite one for Spanish is the Mexican ahorita, which means the now that may be in a couple minutes, it may be in an hour, but it's somewhere around there. It's like ahorita, it's like about now, but it's not now.
Like a little hour, is that kind of like how we would translate? Oh, that's interesting.
No, ahora.
Is
Ahora is now.
oh, okay,
Ahora
now,
is now,
okay.
but little now. So
Little
like
now.
the little now that may at some point in the future be now, but it's not now right now, but it might be a now in a minute, might be a now in 3 minutes, might be a minute in an hour. And then my friend came down, Eric Levin, who I'd mentioned before, and he was and we were hanging out a bunch, and he was learning Spanish, and ChatGPT was helping him to learn Spanish like really well. And at one point we ordered food on WhatsApp, and the restaurant's like, ya está. They said ya está. Ya meaning already, está meaning like it is. And he was like, wait, it's been ready for a long time now, like already, it's been already. And I'm like, no, that's just the way that they mean that it's ready now. The way that time, like, and that definitely exists in a bunch of different things. This is a good question. I want to go pry into it to see if it can use a bunch of languages and see, like, are there, like, because this gets into kind of Noam Chomsky, his work on language. I don't actually know what his work on languages says, but I believe that it has something to do with, like, that all our reality is completely mediated by language. And that there's nothing outside of language that is solid and stable. And that might be right. I don't know. But it reminds me of like Eskimos having 19 different words for snow, and like different crazy languages of not being, like having completely different understandings of time and space. And without those words, you can't express those concepts. That was another long ramble, but anything interesting pop up for you there?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes back to the survival brain again. Like the Eskimos having 19 words for snow makes a lot of sense. If you're an Eskimo and you live in the snow and you have to survive in that environment, you need to know what wet snow means, what powdery snow means, what dry snow means, what slippery snow means. These are all cues to your environment. And I grew up in the snow and I definitely knew like, stay away from yellow snow. Don't step on the black snow because that could, you know, like if it's glossy, there's black ice under there and you could slip. And then, so there's lots of things where, you know, certain layers of snow can indicate that there's like a sinkhole or somewhere where you will just like get stuck. And so to me, that sounds really useful and makes perfect sense. And I don't know how on at like at scale we can pass along this knowledge, this like this knowledge we've learned over time in space without language. It would be really hard. And so in a way, like language is our way of passing on what we've learned so that people can have it, don't have to relearn it all.
Yeah, that's the connection between memory. It's like the transference of memory outside of one body to other bodies across time and space, so that I can learn the lessons that Plato learned 2,000 years ago, and I can benefit from that. That's an intro. I like that kind of evolutionary psychology take on memory and language. That's really interesting. That's cool. And it's just so crazy. Yeah, go for it.
Oh no, I was just gonna say there was something else you asked at the end, and I can't remember what was the last part you asked in the previous question. But there was something interesting there.
It's probably
it's
gone.
okay, we can move on if it's gone.
Well, I just love the fact that AI, the first consumer application, the one that's really gotten me excited, is all about language as well. Like the fact that like it is, it's not the vision one, although the vision one now, if you go to San Francisco, you can get in a self-driving car. Like that one's coming. But the real version of AI that seemed to surprise everyone is that it's all based on our language. And it's just so interesting because, like, what happens? I guess, yeah, you're a writer, so I could ask you what does this do to writing in the next couple of years? What does AI do to writing?
Well, I think for the next couple of years, it's probably going to be primarily used for content, like information transfer. This is, again, this thing, like, information transfer is practical, it's utilitarian. The second level of that, and also an important part of storytelling and writing, or of writing, is storytelling. And this is an even more effective way of information transfer. I think that AI can tell stories, but what it can't do is tell, like, my story or your story. We could put our stories into AI and have it, like, edit it and form it, but it cannot tell my story without me. And so that, I don't know, to me, that's the most important part of writing, is like the person behind the words and like their internal experience and how they've perceived the world around them, and in turn, like, come up with some nugget to share, like whether it's advice or a reflection or an experience that somebody else can relate to. It's about connecting human to human. And storytelling, like, connection is also super critical for our survival and well-being. And storytelling is one way we connect with each other, because we can see ourselves and learn from each other through stories. AI is not great at personal storytelling. Yeah.
Have you heard of a company called Personal AI? I've interviewed them a couple times on the show.
I feel like I've seen it around, maybe in the group where we met, but I'm not super familiar with it, no.
So their idea is basically that there's general knowledge. ChatGPT kind of owns the general knowledge. Then there's specific knowledge, specialist knowledge, which the ChatGPT might get there. Someone else might get there. Might be a whole bunch of different AIs that focus on that. And then there's personal knowledge. For somebody like me, without a Wikipedia page, there's no way that the current AIs are going to know enough about me, unless ChatGPT builds that in, which they very well might do. But personal AI is basically, their goal is to, everybody can upload all of their personal information, and they've done it in a way that's really secure and decentralized, and with that I own. If I put my personal data into personal AI, then I own that data and can port it, and it will be deleted off their servers if I stop interacting with it within 30 days. And so what they do is, so they writers will pay them money and upload all of their content into this personal language model, which will then be able to take that writing and create their own voice. It's an interesting take. I'm not sure if there's a few other competitors there doing that, but I always think that's an interesting take. I'm not sure if will be able to tell the story like you're saying. That you might be right on that. I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's super interesting and a worthy, like, we should try it. It sounds really fascinating and cool. And I think I can see that, like, a lot of writers or online content creators want to do it faster and scale more and be able to write across more platforms. Although I will say, like, I have noticed something, which is there were some people I've been following a very long time. So I have seen their growth trajectory and I've seen their personal evolution through their writing. And when tools like this came out, I immediately could tell they're using AI now. And the writing quality was not bad, and it was similar to what they were doing before, but it's just missing a little bit of something, and it's that personal piece. So maybe where you have more of your personal information uploaded and everything, you can,
but maybe not. Maybe it is beyond the ability for the intelligence. This kind of gets into the more crazy wisdom part of the show, but it's That there might be some sort of essential, I would argue that there is some sort of essential human spirit or soul to each of us that is beyond the ability to be tracked by the linear world. And and when I say linear versus nonlinear, I think it's also important to distinguish between those things. I don't have a good definition right now of nonlinear. But linear, you know, the basic idea is you have point A, point B, and there's a straight line and you cross that straight line. And then there's nonlinear. And then within the nonlinear, which is not linear, not in a part of a line, like exponential growth or, you know, like whole, like things that transcend this idea of going from point A to point B. Among nonlinear, there's parts that of the nonlinear world that can be modeled by the AI. And I'm arguing that there's another layer which can't be modeled by the AI, and that mm-hmm. kind of is more in the spiritual realm of the human soul and things that are hidden, that are invisible, and invisible maybe even to technology. What's your take on that?
I think those things are even invisible to us. I mean, think about how you write. Like, do you know what you're going to say until it's on the page?
No. I barely know what I'm gonna say in the podcast either. It's all just coming out.
Yeah. that's like part of it is that every word has a connection in your brain mm-hmm. to the next word, to the next word. Mm-hmm. And it's influenced by what you're feeling and experiencing in the now and in the like your recent awareness. So I could write the exact same post today and yesterday, and they will be different. Like if the topic is the same and the outline is the same, they will just be different because I'm different today than I was yesterday. That part, I don't know. Like, I think that's just like part of the human person and the human, like you can call it spirit, soul, whatever. It's also partly this sense memory again, which is like certain words trigger memories, and those memories are not going to be able to be unless you can like transcribe all your memories and upload them into a model. I just don't know how it's going to be able to get that level of depth.
Yeah, and memories goes back to all the other things we were talking about, the eight senses, because it's like not only mm-hmm. memories, but also the eight senses and also whatever other senses or whatever other things that we don't currently understand about the body and the mind, also having them in there as well. And I guess this gets into the sort of Neuralink, you know, like actually put the chip in the brain. And we might not even need that, because there's also fMRI technologies that can passively mm-hmm. read brain signals with no, you don't have to cross the blood brain barrier or the skull. And you can just passively read people's thoughts and dreams using MRI technology that exists. So there might not even be that, but again, it gets back to that point of just like, that's if our understanding of the way that the human brain and body and mind work is accurate, which everything from science so far has told us, no, it's not accurate. There's a bunch we're mm-hmm. missing right now. And there's a bunch we're going to figure out. Yeah, we figured some things out, but we don't know enough to say it basically.
Yeah. And even if you can read it accurately, how do you know if you're interpreting it accurately? It's like, that's the part to me that's harder, I think, is it's again, back to that guy looks angry. Is he angry at me, or is he just annoyed about the like leaf blowers in the background? You know, you don't really know what somebody's experiencing, and human beings are really, really good at like kind of filtering out some of this like interoception and background mm-hmm. noise and stuff mm-hmm. and trying to stay present in the moment. But like, we're not always going to share that. We're not going to be like, oh, that those leaf blowers are really a drag. And oh, by the way, like I have a traumatic memory linked to leaf blowers because yeah. like when I was a kid,
yeah,
like not these things out. Went down and, you know, my grandparents were always outside with the leaf blower. Like you don't know that about somebody, and a leaf blower to you might just be nothing, background noise you could filter out, and to somebody else, it might be very triggering. So, I don't really see people like going into their ChatGPT models and being like, I'm triggered by leaf blowers, because they're probably not even aware. Like they're probably not aware of that either. So
Yeah, it's
there's
just
so many layers.
there's so many layers to reality, which makes it so interesting, but also very challenging to live in a world like this where we don't really know what's going on most of the time, even though that our egos tell us that we know. Yeah, and it's really interesting because I think this is going to be a big sticking point for a lot of the materialists who I get the sense from believe that science has reached its pinnacle and that we know a lot of things and that we know the important things. And I think a lot of them are going to get really surprised by the next stage in evolution. Well, cool. We got about 5 minutes left. What are you working on? What are you building right now?
I'm building a platform to help people find sensory wellness tools and information. There's a lot of women primarily, but it can affect anybody who are considered neurodivergent. And so that could be diagnoses like ADHD or autism, but it could also be like dyslexia, dyspraxia, trauma, chronic illness. Like these things all impact our brains. And there's lots of different theories. Like I believe really creative brains are neurodivergent. So a lot of like artists, probably most entrepreneurs are neurodivergent. But if you are neurodivergent, you're one of those people that's like taking in a lot more sensory input than others, and you're less able to filter it out. So it can become very overwhelming. And in our world now, like our modern world, we have a ton of inputs. And so it can be almost unmanageable for a lot of people's nervous systems. And so I'm just helping provide like resources and education. Okay, I'm struggling with sleep. Well, there's a lot of unnatural things in our environment that can interfere with sleep, especially if you're sensitive. So giving people tools like, okay, weighted blankets, like here's some sleep hygiene tips that work for a neurodivergent brain, supplements, like blue light blocking glasses, those kinds of things. And also how to navigate like getting the right therapy or the right doctor or the right medication or whatever it is you can access and need. And I'm trying to like play with ChatGPT to see if I can make a smart model to help people get their questions asked. So if they say they're struggling with sleep, we can give them recommendations for products, but also services and information.
That's really interesting. Have you put it all into a GPT yet? Have you played around with the GPTs?
I have. I uploaded a lot of the content that we've published on our site, and then all like the product catalog, and it does okay. I think the one thing that I'm trying to get right is like all of the different therapeutic models and getting the personal recommendations to be more accurate, because and also like the way I feel like anything in the realm of like therapy or psychotherapy or health, like that, that has to be cared for very carefully. So it's not public, but I'm playing with it.
Yeah, it's it feels like that might be where the large language model comes in, the training the expert model or something like that on that specific use case. But yeah, so you said it's not public yet, or is there a website that people can go?
There's a website, it's gettouchyfeely.com. It's my old like MVP's store. So it's right now I'm pivoting to be more like content based, but that website will work. So you could still go there and read content. The ChatGPT model is not public though.
Oh, okay, that's what you're saying. Cool. So get touchy feely, is that right? Cool. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you. It was really great.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Stuart Alsop III. Also, don't forget to subscribe on Spotify or iTunes for every weekly episode that I publish on Monday mornings. Hope you have a great day.